This morning, I get to both end our series in the book of Proverbs, and I get to begin our series together for the holidays as we, I kind of sounded New Zealand, together for the holidays, mate, as we join together both 9 and 11 service. And in God's kindness, he's given us a topic that perfectly dovetails these two things together. Today, we are going to talk about friendship. And friendship is not only an essential part of living the good life, but it's also going to be the glue that's going to hold us together and help our community grow over the next 6 weeks as we come together in one service. And even in the beginning of the Bible, we get a glimpse of how important friendship is. After God has made man in his image and he makes the world, the only thing he says is, many of you know it, it is not good for man to be alone. And certainly marriage is an application to that, but not all saints in Scripture were called to marriage. And so marriage isn't the only application of it is not good for man to be alone. Friendship is an essential and necessary part of what it means to live the good life. C.S. Lewis, a great writer, thought friendship so important. He wrote, "Friendship causes perhaps half of all of the happiness in the world." To make it a little bit more personal, perhaps friendship is responsible for about half of the happiness in your own life. However, though friendship is crucial to have a fulfilling life and to have a sense of purpose and joy, we have a problem because our culture is becoming more and more isolated. And friendships, especially meaningful, deep friendships, are becoming harder and harder to find. Even a quick glance of our culture will show this. One survey found that, quote, "The number of Americans who say they have no close friends has roughly tripled in recent decades, leaving one out of every four people in America reporting they have no close friends." And this is mind-blowing considering that you are in a room of 500 plus people right now. And maybe you feel personally alone. We have this crazy phenomenon in our culture that though we are more united physically and digitally than ever before, we have more people than ever saying they feel alone. How is it possible that we can have 500 friends on Facebook, 300 followers on Instagram, and yet we can feel like we have no one to walk through life with? We can feel like there's no one to share our struggles or help process the hard things that are happening. And if that wasn't bad enough, MIT just did a survey to see how many friendships are reciprocated. And so they surveyed the same amount of people in three parts of the world. And they found that 95% of people reported, yeah, this person is my friend and the friendship is reciprocal. But when they polled that friend, they found out that only 50% of people that you call you friend in return. So right now, that means statistically, half the people in your life who you call a friend don't consider you a friend. Welcome to Together for the Holidays. And I don't need to tell you this. I mean, we experienced this. I mean, have you ever not been invited to something? You're like, hey, I should have been there. Right? A big moment, a birthday party, a wedding. You're let out of something that you're like, our friendship means that I should be let in this moment, or you should have been here for me in this moment. And many of us have felt let down and let out by our friends. I remember when I got married, I, in true millennial fashion, made a huge deal of my bridal party, and I wrote just these long notes to each guy that I asked to stand next to me, and I wrote out, this means you're committing to me and my wife. This means that you're going to walk through life with us. I'm not just asking you to show up for a photo. I'm asking you to show up for my marriage. And I made this big deal, and I sat down with each of them, and I explained that, and they all joyfully and willingly said yes. And they stood next to me on my wedding day, and it was a wonderful day. But 3 weeks later, I had a major medical episode that put me in the hospital without the ability to speak or read or write. And it was the scariest time in my life. I had no idea what my future held. I didn't know if I'd ever be able to talk again or to read again or to preach again. And of those friends who stood by me, two of them didn't even reach out for weeks. They didn't text, they didn't call, they didn't check in, and I was so hurt by that. I was so hurt that weeks prior, I had asked them to stand by my side as a close friend, and I'm going through the hardest time of my life, and they couldn't send out a text, they couldn't call, they couldn't check in. And so 3 months went by, and I communicated that to them, and there was so much pain. And so if it's true that half the friends we think we have aren't really our friends, and it's becoming harder and harder to find close friendships, how do we move forward? How do we heal from these past negative experiences where we've been hurt by people? And yet, how do we engage in deeper relationships in a culture that's continually getting more and more shallow? Well, I suggest that we take the advice of the great American thinker, Ralph Emerson, who wisely said that the only way to have a friend is to be one. The only way to have a friend is to be one. Instead of focusing on how to have better friendships or how to find new friends altogether, I believe the answer to our modern problem of friendship is found in turning to the Bible to observe how God pursued us as his friends. I think that we should not focus so much on finding the friends we want, but by becoming the friend that others need. The only way to have a friend is to be one. Think back on the story of how God pursued you as friends. And this will give us a model of what friendship actually looks like. In the Bible, we learn that God doesn't need friends. He exists, don't ask me to explain it, three people in one entity. So he has community in and of himself already. He functions in this joyful, perfect, relational friendship for all of eternity. And yet he still selflessly offers himself as a friend to us. And this model is nothing like what the world has to offer, because God flips the whole thing upside down. Instead of me concerned with what I can get out of others, God gives us an example of what it looks like to give of yourself so others can have that friendship. I mean, imagine for a minute three close friends, best friends. They do everything together. They go everywhere together. They're inseparable, and at all times they are selfless. At all times they prefer the other person. At all times they're enjoying life, and each person brings something unique to that friendship. If I heard about that and it was local, I'd be like, hey, how do I get in on that? That sounds amazing. How do I become friends? How do I make this my squad, as my high schoolers would say? But see, here's the problem. I'm not that type of a friend. I do make mistakes. I do act selflessly. And so the moment I introduce myself into that perfect Trinitarian friendship, I interrupt it. I make a mess out of it. I act impulsively. I act selfishly. I break up the joy and the unity that once existed. And who bears the cost of that? Who bears the cost of inviting me into that type of friendship? Well, the three friends do. And I would like to put to you today that that is the story of the gospel. That God had friendship in and of himself, and he willingly chose to lay that aside and bear the cost of including you and inviting you to be his friend. In Romans 5, it says this, you see, at the right time, when we were powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous man, though for a good man, someone might die. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. For if when we were enemies of God, we were reconciled to him through his death and the death of his son, how much more being reconciled shall we be saved through his life? today, before we move forward in friendship, if you have never received the invitation of God into that friendship, it is available to you. And maybe you say to yourself, well, I'm an enemy of God. I don't believe in God, or I'm an enemy of the church, or I'm an enemy of Christians. Good. That is precisely where you need to be to enter into the friendship that God offers you on behalf of Jesus. If you are sitting here today and you have never said, I want that relationship, I want to enter into this perfect friendship, I want to have someone that's always there for me, that will always let me in and never let me down, the answer is Jesus. And that invitation is open to you today. And not only is God's offer of friendship so that we would know him unto salvation, it's also how we come to know each other in relationship. The very act of how God extended friendship to us is a model and a pattern for how we extend friendship to others. See, the world wants to tell you, you need to get out there and find the friends that are going to make you happy. You need to get out there and find the friends that are going to fulfill your needs and support you in what you're doing. But in Jesus, we see that the real secret to friendship is becoming what other people need. That we actually focus on becoming the friend we need, not getting the friends that we want. When you choose to embrace the biblical idea of friendship that's not based on consumerism, but is based on sacrifice, what happens is you begin to practice the very essence of what makes someone a good friend. By doing that, you are rehearsing and you're becoming the type of person people want to be friends with. It's counterintuitive, but when you become for others what they need out of friendship, they're drawn to you because you are rehearsing and being an example of what God has done for the world. But how do we do this? How do we become the type of good friend that others are looking for? Well, according to Proverbs, we become a good friend by being encouraging yet honest, boundaried yet invested, and imperfect yet forgiving. We become that type of friend by being encouraging yet honest, boundaried yet invested, imperfect yet forgiving. So friends are encouraging yet honest. A true friend knows how to be there for you when you're going through tough decisions or tough times. They know how to speak life to you. They know how to encourage you in a timely manner. Proverbs 12:25 says, anxiety in a man's heart weighs it down, but a good word makes him glad. Anxiety weighs a man down, but a good word makes him glad. The word encouragement means to clothe in courage. I like that. It's to clothe someone in courage. And I think we need courage a little bit more than we would not like to admit as we go through life. This world is filled with negativity. It's filled with competition. It's filled with things that are trying to bring us down constantly. And a good friend, and being a good friend, means it knows how to tell people and how to wrap them in courage. As a teacher, I was a high school teacher for 2 years, and as part of my training, I had to read this study. And the study sought to seek the type of perception students have of their teacher. Is your teacher always criticizing you? Or is your teacher encouraging? And so they set up strict ratios to see where it would tip the scales to where students would say, most of the time my teacher encourages me. And so they started with a 3-to-1 ratio. And they monitor this. So every time you're in class and you talk to a student, for every one time you criticize them, you need 3 words of affirmation. And so they polled all the students, and all the students said of that teacher, they mostly criticize me. And they stepped it up to 4 and 5 and 6, and it took 7 words of encouragement to 1 word of critique before people started perceiving that person as encouraging. I think we need a lot more encouragement than we like to admit. I think that we like the perception that we're strong and we can do things on our own, but really when you examine us, we need to be encouraged. We need to know in tough situations that we can get through them and that God is able to do great things through us. Proverbs 16:24 says, pleasant words are honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. So the Bible would ask you today, are you the type of friend who knows how to encourage others? When's the last time you encouraged your friends? Not flattery, not telling them what they want to hear, but encourage them to go through a tough time. And are you the type of person who knows how to bring healing to the soul? I love that proverb. Encouragement is crucial in friendship. And if you learn to be an encouraging friend, stand back and watch how God will bring people to your side to drink from the refreshing words of kindness that you provide. And yet there's a big difference, as we've said, between encouragement and flattery. And Proverbs warns against building friendships on flattery or simply telling people what they want to hear. I mean, we've been in this situation before, right? Where someone's encouraging us or saying positive things. And at first it's like, oh yeah, you know, these things are all true about me, absolutely. But then after a while you're like, wait a minute, like, I'm not like that. You just said I was the nicest person you've ever met in your life. I know that's not true, okay? I know I'm not the nicest person you've ever met in your life. And we are kind of repulsed by that. So quite quickly, something that connects us and builds us up, and when it's based on flattery, when it's based on pleasing others, it actually becomes repulsive to us. And Proverbs 27 says this, better is open rebuke than hidden love. Some of you know this well. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. What does that mean, faithful are the wounds of a friend? Well, Oscar Wilde says it this way. He says, a true friend stabs you from the front. I like that. A true friend stabs you from the front, because we know that sometimes the truth hurts, doesn't it? Sometimes our life isn't being lived the way God wants it to be lived, or maybe we're heading down a dangerous course that's not good for us. And a true friend will be able to cut through the flattery, cut through the superficial nature of a relationship, and tell it like it is. You know, this true test comes out when you have tacos for lunch and you get cilantro stuck in your teeth. And you go through your whole work day and no one says anything. And finally, you get home or you bump into someone and they go, hey, you have a piece of cilantro in your teeth. And you're like, what, cilantro? You're like, I had tacos for lunch. It's 6:30. And then you start thinking of every person you had an actual conversation with. Oh, they're not my friends. They're not my true friend. No way. They let me hang to dry. And you think of every person who just sat there and awkwardly, like, looked at you, probably took a few steps back because they were uncomfortable because you had this massive green piece of cilantro left over, like you were saving it for a different meal or something. And it's just awkward. And in that moment, you know who your true friends are. And Proverbs wants to tell you, hey, guys, be the type of person that calls out the cilantro. All right, and not just, that is my Eugene Peterson message interpretation of this thing, all right? And not just in people's teeth, but in people's lifestyle, in people's soul, in people's direction. I remember when I was 23, I had just spent 3 years living my own life, pursuing the lifestyle of kind of a college person in the world, and I had God got a hold of me miraculously, and I really wanted to follow the Lord, and I started following God. And it had only been 6 months. And the pastor from the church I grew up with called me and said he wanted to talk. And so he brought me into his office, and he said, Ryan, I heard you're following the Lord now, which is great because we need a youth pastor. And so I'd like to offer you a full-time job with benefits and a house that you can live in for free, and you'll come here and you'll be the youth pastor. And I was so excited. I thought for sure this was the call of God on my life. I mean, it was out of the blue. It seemed like something God would do, just bless me with this amazing job. And so I began to talk to people about what I should do, seeking counsel. And I talked to probably like 8 people, including my parents and friends, and everybody gave me the green light. Everyone's like, this sounds like God. Go for it. You've recently started following the Lord. This is how he's rewarding you. And I sat down with one of my close friends who was also a pastor on staff at the church I was attending. And I began in excitement to explain how this was God's will and how God had provided it. And throughout the course of the meal, he just kind of slowly dropped his head and he wasn't saying much. And so at the end of my excitement, I said, well, what do you think? And he just began to graciously speak the truth in love and told me I wasn't ready, that I had so much to figure out in terms of my relationship with my Lord. And I was immature and I was young. And the consequences of going into ministry before God had prepared you and called you were detrimental. And I left that dinner so mad. I was so mad at him. And it took me a couple days of processing. And out of those 8 words of affirmation, the Spirit of God highlighted that one and I turned down the job. And I am so, so thankful. When I look back to where I was personally, it would have been a disaster. It would have been an absolute disaster for me to take that job. And I'm so thankful for my friend and my pastor who spoke the truth in love and was not afraid to call out and speak life by being honest with me, not just by encouraging me or telling me what I wanted to hear. Guys, when we speak the truth in love to our friends, we can save them. We can save them from pain. We can save them from heartache. We can save them from years and years of regret and isolation and the enemy attacking. We must be a community that speaks the truth in love to one another. We have to be encouraging and honest. So today, I want to ask you, which of your friends is slowly pulling away from church? Go to them. Which of your friends is showing romantic interest in someone who is just bad news for them? Speak up about it. Which of your friends is sacrificing their family on the altar of their career? Talk about it. Because those are the pivotal moments that God uses, and those can be life-changing if we have the boldness and we're filled with the Spirit to be honest. So friends are encouraging yet honest, but friends are also boundaried yet invested. Boundaried yet invested. Proverbs 18:24 says, a man of too many friends comes to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Wow, a man of too many friends comes to ruin. What a timely and prophetic word for our culture and how we view friendship. Now, this wouldn't be such a bad thing if these were actual friends, but there's 2 words for friend in Proverbs, and one of them is the same as neighbor. So this could be translated neighbor or friend. And what the Bible is warning us is, hey, don't just be friends with everyone that's around you. Just because someone lives next to you or works next to you or is around you at the social club you're involved in, don't be a friend to everyone. See, the problem is if we were actually friends, invested in there for us, this wouldn't be an issue. But oftentimes our friendships are a mile long and an inch deep. And we're friends with so many people that no one truly knows us. No one really knows what we're going through or how to encourage us. And so we're not boundaried in our friendships, and so we are stretched and stretched thin. I've really felt this in my life this year because we have a wonderful problem at Southlands, and that's we actually like each other. That is not a given in churches in America, unfortunately. We go to a church where we actually like each other. And so even now, you could not possibly be friends with even a quarter of the people in this room. Based on God's definition of biblical friendship, where you are invested and engaged, it would drive you crazy to try to keep up and care for everyone in this room. And yet the facade of social media and the small depth of relationship that qualifies as a friend can kind of keep us on the surface for years. So let us not spread ourselves too thin that at the end of the day we have nothing left to give. And let us not reach so wide that we neglect the deep and real friends that God has called us to love. The tension here is that we are called to be boundaried, but we're also called to be invested. Proverbs 17:17 says, a friend loves at all times. That's a pretty high standard. A friend loves at all times. In fact, the verse says a friendship is almost deeper than family because it says, and a brother is born for adversity. And some of you really feel that. Your family might not be safe to talk about big faith decisions, or your family might not be safe to walk you through hardship, but your friend should be there at all times. I mean, the picture of a friend like this is quite compelling. It's someone who's present in your life. It's someone who knows the details of what's happening and how you feel. It's someone who can pray for you and help you through tough decisions. It's someone who's faithful and available. And I love the word invest because it's so true. Real friendship always costs you something. Whether it costs you your time or it costs you your truck when they have to move and you are the one. People say your real friends are those who come to help you move, right? That's a true test of people who are willing to have a cost. But that cost isn't just a cost, it's an investment. When we are willing to give towards other people, we are investing, and the returns of friendship are exponential. When we invest in friends deeply, the return of what we find in companionship and what God does through that is amazing. I mean, let's picture for a minute that of all the verses we've read, just this one, just these six words, a friend loves at all times. What if the next 6 weeks we as a church decided to live out these six words? Just these six words, a friend loves at all times. How do you think that would change our community? How would Sunday mornings look different? How would life groups look different? How would our weekends look different? How would it look different after work when we were tired and we didn't want to host people, but we were compelled to open up our doors and invest in those in our community? A friend loves at all times. And from someone who struggles from a good amount of friendship guilt, I'm so thankful that Proverbs doesn't leave us hanging. Because I often feel the tension of what God's called me to be as a friend, and I just can't be that. In this new season I'm in, placed with a foster daughter who's very needy and needs to be held and needs to be soothed often, my wife and I have very little time for friendships. And so we've had to rethink, God, what does it look like for us to love this beautiful daughter that you've given us, but also invest in the community? And some of you are single parents and you feel exhausted by having to work two jobs or all that you have going on, or maybe you're a college student and your load is so heavy that thinking about investing in friendships deeply just scares you, and you wonder, how is this going to be possible? And so I'm so thankful that God knows in our last tension that friends are imperfect yet forgiving. There's room for mistakes. There's room for being imperfect in friendship. And in fact, we have to have the right expectations to place on our friends. The story I told you of the two men in my bridal party isn't the whole story. The whole story is that I had set an expectation on them that separated us. I had put and set this standard on them that they hadn't necessarily agreed to. And I drove them away. And I harbored bitterness against them because they didn't call me or they didn't text me. But I neglected all the times that they needed me and I didn't reach out to them. I neglected to think about all of the moments that they were going through hardship. They were going through divorces in their family. They were going through financial hardship. They were going through turmoil. And I was the one who neglected to reach out to them. And we need to be careful of the expectations that we place on our friends and the expectations we have for friendship. They don't need to be perfect, and they will fail you at some point. At some point, all of our friends will fail us, and at some point, we will fail all of our friends. I like to call this relational expectation the dangerous secret weight. The dangerous secret weight, because when you put expectations on people, oh, you should have been at my party. Oh, you should have called me. Oh, you should have showed up to help me. You are slowly piling weight on top of the back of the relationship. And they can feel it. You can feel it, can't you? When someone expects way too much of you as a friend, it's unrealistic. You're always letting them down. And they're just piling this weight on top of the back of the friendship. And eventually, at some point, that relationship is going to break. And so we need to be careful of the expectation and the weight that we're putting on our friends. And lastly, it's so dangerous to have the secret weight that we place on others, because often we are trying to look for in friends what only Jesus can provide. I love what Tim Keller says. He says, Jesus is the only friend who always lets you in and never lets you down. Jesus is the only friend who always lets you in and never lets you down. That means when we try to find perfection from our friends, or when we try to be the perfect friend, it will drive us to break those friendships. Only in your relationship with God can you expect perfection. Can you expect that God is always going to be there for you, that God is always going to let you in to what he is doing? And at times, our friends will let us down and our friends will keep us out. But Jesus is a friend that sticks closer than a brother. Jesus is the friend who, at great cost to himself and the Trinity, allowed us to come in to friendship with him. And that is what infuses us with faith to have friendships with one another. That's what is our guiding motivation for loving other people and for being there for other people, because we know how it feels to be loved by God. We know what it's like to be accepted unconditionally by the Father. And so today, as we close, I want to challenge us, and myself included, not to be perfect friends, but to be available friends, to encourage one another and to speak the truth in love, to be boundaried and selective, yet to be all in our friendships invested, and to know that they are friends are going to be imperfect, but yet God calls us to forgive, just as God has forgiven us. And I wonder today what type of friend you have been to Jesus in return. With all of the friendship and invitation that Christ has offered you, what type of friend have you been in return? Do you talk to him throughout your day? Are you invested in what's going on in his life and the things that he's doing through his kingdom? Are you thankful for the ways that he's sacrificed and extended this relationship to you? And if we think through that lens, by God's grace and the Spirit's power, it's going to help us be better friends to one another. One practical way we're doing that is a let's do lunch at the end of service. So after each service, we're going to have different leaders in the community going to different locations throughout the area. And I would ask you guys, go to some of those. Sit and talk with people, invest and dive deeper into our community as we're together for the holidays. Would you guys pray with me?